This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
She decided to vote against the bill because she doesn't think the city should go into debt in order to move City Hall.
I wonder if you could tell our listeners why you decided to vote against issuing $7 million in bonds for the city.
Thanks for the question. The city purchased the Round office building a little over a year ago. And it was the intent to move City Hall over there. And there needs to be considerable amount of work done on that building. It is basically a shell. What happened was we did not save or put money aside into a building fund knowing that it was going to cost, we're up to now, I think, $5.4 million to build out the interior of that building. And we consistently spend money. And I didn't think that as a municipality, we should go out and take a commercial loan, and we call it a revenue bond, from a commercial bank, pay the banking fees, because we didn't have a fiscally sound strategic plan to say, why don't we start setting aside money so that we can go to the community and say, you know, we need $5.4 million to move over there, but we have set aside out of our budget. Last year's budget that's just ending, I think July 1st, was $170 million, and the budget we're looking at going forward is $180 million. And not to be able to find $7 million in that budget, I didn't think was strategically beneficial for the citizens. I'm not convinced that in these economic times, it's fiscally responsible to go into debt.
So your recommendation would be to wait a year, work it into the budget so that the city would not go so much into debt. Is there any chance of that happening, or is this bond measure definitely moving forward at this point?
Well, it was passed last night. I mean, it was passed Tuesday night at the council. Now, we're entering into our budget process in a week and a half. So we will be able to look at the budget, and there is an effort underway, I believe, in my conversations that I've had with the mayor on let's scrutinize this budget and see if we can take some money from the budget and reduce our loan. My idea is I'm not in favor of any loan. I don't think as a municipality that's the way we should be going. This is not an emergency. This is not a disaster.
Do you think you'll have some leverage in the budget talks to maybe have this this bond measure revisited?
I'm not sure. I think it'll be discussed, but since the council has already voted on it, I'm not sure that the other councilors would want to open that up and re-vote. I don't ever think of this money as mine. I think of this money as the community's. And we have not heard a great outcry from the community to say, yes, go ahead, move to the Round, and go borrow money.
Have you heard any response to the bond measure from voters? Are people concerned about the city going into debt?
A little surprise comments on how can you do it. One question was, how can you do a revenue bond and you don't have to ask the citizens? And the answer by law is that if we're going to, on this kind of a bond, we can use franchise fees, and so we don't have to go to the citizen. And I'm not, I think we're more citizen-centered than that. And I'd like us to do things that don't put us in debt.
Well, thanks very much. Again, I've been speaking with Benny Bodie, who is a city councilor for the city of Beaverton, speaking about the $7 million bond measure that was just approved by the city council this week to help move the city hall to the Round. This is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO News.
With much of the attention to Portland's upcoming elections focused on the fluoridation debate, the race for three open Portland school board seats, zones 4, 5, and 6, has gotten less talk. Zone 4, which covers most of North Portland, sees incumbent since 2008 Martin Gonzalez against challenger and PPS watchdog Steve Buell. Gonzalez has opposed several school closures and says he wants to focus on closing the achievement gap. Buell, a part of the advocacy group Oregon Save Our Schools and past school board member in the early 80s, is interested in reducing reliance on standardized testing and strengthening equity between schools. He challenged Gonzalez for the same seat in 2009. Zone 5, which covers Grant and Madison schools and several feeder schools, sees Pam Knowles running unopposed. Her stated goals include securing school funding and working with the teachers' union. The Zone 6 seat, which includes Franklin High and several feeder schools from Franklin and Madison, is being vacated by Trudy Sargent. Tom Kohler and David Morrison are competing for the seat. Mr. Kohler says he will focus on effective school leadership, teacher-led reform, and partnering with the community, in particular community businesses. Mr. Morrison is pushing for the removal of Wi-Fi from public schools, saying that Wi-Fi is physically harmful to students. He sued the district in 2011 to remove Wi-Fi, but his suit was dismissed. Today I spoke with Susan Barrett with Oregon Save Our Schools for her take on the races. Buell's voter pamphlet material accuses the board of dancing around critical issues. What are some of those issues?
One for me is that I find that our school board is not questioning any of the mandates that come down from the federal and state level, and they're just trying to respond to them, which puts the public completely out of the picture. And that public also includes our teachers. So it's our teachers, our parents, our students are totally left out of the decision making, yet we're the ones that are closest to the students and should have really the most say. Some of the new reforms have come down from the state in terms of the achievement compact, and now teachers having to be evaluated based on test scores. The board hasn't questioned that. They've just gone along with the flow, and they need to stop, and they need to question it. They need to make sure that they are representing their community.
Several sources have referred to Mr. Buell as someone who is interested in corporate reform. Do you have any position on what the corporate or business community's influence on school board business has been?
Oh, I think it's been huge. If you look at the federal level, we have a number of influences, just looking at even how Common Core came about being pushed by Pearson and the Gates Foundation. But then you look at our state level and who's actually developing the state level policy. Well, it's really the Oregon Business Council.
What have been perhaps some successes of Mr. Gonzalez over the course of his tenure?
I personally don't have anything against Martin. I'm actually not voting for him, not because I'm voting against him, but because I'm voting for someone who can do something different and actually raise a voice. And that's, I just don't see that happening right now. So Martin, you know, he certainly is speaking up for equity, and I like the fact that he stood up against the closures of some of our schools, but it's just not enough to have me vote for him.
Moving on to Zone 6, which is being vacated, it sees Tom Kohler pitted against David Morrison.
I just met Mr. Morrison at in Salem, and I asked him if he was actually truly wanting to be on the school board or if this was just a way for him to educate people about this issue. And he said, well, someday he might like to be on the school board. This was really just his way of educating people about the issue. So it really makes the only option Mr. Kohler.
The Oregonian editorial board claimed that the very thing that you mentioned, that David Morrison has admitted that he's more interested in raising awareness about the Wi-Fi issue than actually winning the seat. They claimed that that's allowed Kohler to coast during his race. Do you find this to be the case? And if so, is that problematic?
Well, here's what I find problematic. I find it problematic that we can't get people to run for school board. The problem is we know a number of people who are very, very interested in running for school board, but because this is a position where you have to get your message heard across the entire city and you have to appeal to the entire city, it limits who can run. You have to be able to raise money. I think if we could get to the point where we could change things and have people run just in their zone and only have to be elected by people in their zone, it would allow us to have more candidates who, first of all, have firsthand knowledge of what's going on in the schools in their community. And it would also give us a greater diversity of candidates who would be running. So that's the thing that I think is the problem, because right now even Pam Knowles is coasting. There is absolutely no one running against Pam Knowles, yet most of the people who live in her zone don't want to vote for her. She's hardly ever stepped foot into any of the schools. She never holds a dialogue with any of the parents or teachers in the schools. She takes her orders essentially from the Portland Business Alliance. She's completely out of touch with our school. And once again, she's another board member who is not standing up to the mandates that are coming down the pike and even questioning them. You need to stop and talk to the teachers. She hasn't really done anything to build a relationship with teachers and with parents and with students.
I've been speaking with Susan Barrett with Oregon Save Our Schools. This has been Jen Chavez for KBOO News.
Yesterday, Governor Kitzhaber revealed a new budget proposal that will require bipartisan support to pass the state legislature. The new plan would generate just over $900 million in savings from the Public Employee Retirement System, or PERS, in the next 2 years. In order to do so, Kitzhaber wants to reduce or eliminate money match benefits for retired public employees. With money match benefits, a public employer matches the balance of their employee's bank account at the time of retirement and distributes this amount monthly. The governor hopes to use this money to fund schools and social programs. Public employee unions strongly oppose any PERS cuts, and some even see it as an illegal breach of contract. However, advocates for education encourage PERS cuts. Senate Minority Leader Ted Feroli argues that the PERS cuts are not enough and says he will not settle for partial solutions. In a recent statement, House Speaker Tina Kotek said that she looks forward to working with her Republican colleagues to make adjustments to the PERS budget. The governor said that if representatives from both parties do not move forward with his proposal, he will urge lawmakers to use existing resources to form a new budget plan.
The group Solidarity Against Austerity is currently holding a rally outside of the Portland City Hall. According to Mayor Charlie Hales, the city is facing a $25 million shortfall, and he has proposed 10% cuts to most city agencies. Among the services that will face cuts this year are housing programs, community centers, funding for parks maintenance, Sun after-school programs, youth employment services, fire stations, the Multnomah Youth Commission, and the East Portland Action Plan. The protesters say that instead of budget cuts, Portland should tax rich corporations and individuals and tap internal service funds in order to preserve vital services in the city. We're joined on the phone today by one of the protesters. And we will ask them a few questions about what will be happening today at the event. Hello. Oh, it looks like they may not be on the line. We'll be returning to them in just a moment to see if we can get someone on the phone.
The hunger strike and force feeding of prisoners at Guantanamo is still ongoing, and the Obama administration continues to approve the force feeding procedures, which are considered torture under international law. Around the country, concerned citizens are engaging in one-day rolling hunger strikes to try to bring attention to the plight of the Guantanamo prisoners. Close to 100 of the prisoners in Guantanamo have been cleared for release. But the U.S. government has refused to allow them to be released from its prison camp in Cuba. On his way into a House judiciary hearing this morning, Attorney General Eric Holder was confronted by an audience member who said that 29 people are currently being force-fed at Guantanamo and asking Holder to appoint a special envoy to Guantanamo.
Are now being force-fed. And please appoint a special envoy. Members of the audience must behave in an orderly fashion or else they will be removed from the hearing room. Rule 11 of the House rules provides that the chairman of the committee may punish breaches of order and decorum by censure and exclusion from the hearing. And this is your last warning.
Eric Holder did not respond to the request that he appoint a special envoy to Guantanamo to investigate the force feedings of hunger strikers. Here in Portland this afternoon, veteran peace activist Brian Wilson launched a solidarity hunger strike outside our city hall. Wilson gained worldwide recognition in the late 1980s when he was run over by a nuclear missile train during a protest of that train and lost both his legs. KBOO's Jimmy Tardy spoke with Wilson outside the Portland City Hall this afternoon.
I'm out here in front of City Hall with Brian Wilson, who's recently begun a hunger strike in solidarity with the hunger strikers at Guantanamo. Brian, what was it that made you decide to embark on this hunger strike?
Well, of course, I've been following this strike for 3 months. It's been going on for tomorrow's 100th day in the news, and I knew that there were a bunch of people in the United States who were talking about rolling fasts. There's about 1,200 people doing rolling fasts. And then I knew that Diane Wilson, who's a very interesting woman from Texas, started a water-only fast out front of the White House on May 1st. So she's in her, whatever it is, 17th day. She's a tough woman. She's 65. She's been in and out of jail a lot, but she's an environmentalist. So I knew that was happening after May 1st. Well, and they were looking for somebody else to join her in some kind of a long-term fast. And then one night I read this account of how the force feeding happens in detail. And I was so upset. I read it at about 11 o'clock at night, and I went to bed, couldn't sleep. I went out in our backyard. I just started crying. I didn't want to wake up Becky. I just started crying. I said, this is medieval. It's being done in my name, basically, as a U.S. person. So at that point, which is about a week ago, I said, you know, I've got to join Diane Wilson and maybe others in a committed long-term fast. And so I consulted with my trainer and a nutritionist, and we came up with a 300-calorie-a-day plan that made sure I got all the basic nutrients through vegetables and fruit and a little bit of millet and a little bit of oatmeal, like a quarter of a cup a day. So it's actually going to be a cleansing fast for me and will keep me going for several weeks before I have to make another decision. I probably can make it a month without getting sick or feeling that weak. And I'll consult with the people, Diane, the Witness Against Torture people who are coordinating the rolling fast, Code Pink, who are helping with that fast. They're with Diane Wilson at the White House, giving her support. And I'll consult with my partner, Becky, and my trainer. And but as long as these Guantanamo hunger strikers, there have been 130 of them, are striking, I feel like I have to keep fasting.
What do you think President Obama or Attorney General Holder should do about the situation? What are you asking for?
What they should do? A lot of us know what they should do. They should release all the prisoners and close Guantanamo. Prisoners have been there 10 and 11 years with no charges, no trial, and never seen their families. They can't communicate with their families. I mean, this is barbaric medievalism. I mean, I can hardly comprehend it in my own body. But whether they will, I mean, they haven't done anything for 10 years, neither Bush nor Obama. So, but they certainly should close the prison and release the prisoners. I mean, if you were incarcerated for 11 years without charge, you would be normally released. Unless they're so embarrassed they can't release them because they know they can't try them because they won't get a conviction. Because all these guys are there, and whatever they've said has all been through grotesque torture, which even with a relaxed bar is not going to wash. with any kind of a judicial tribunal. And so, I mean, it's an embarrassment for us. It's just draconian. And so all I can do is make my expression in solidarity with others. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have an attachment to an expectation. But it's important for me to be expressive of my revulsion of this policy and in some way replicate a little bit what the prisoners are going through in terms of depriving my own body.
That was KBOO's Jimmy Tardy speaking with peace activist Brian Wilson outside of Portland's City Hall this afternoon.
And now we're back to the Solidarity Against Austerity rally that's happening now outside of Portland City Hall. We're joined on the phone now by one of the protesters. Hello.
Hello.
What brings you out to City Hall today?
Well, we're protesting the city cuts to the budget, the layoffs that are happening, the cuts to the parks and the community centers and all the resources for the public.
And what does Solidarity Against Austerity propose in order to address the budget's shortfall?
Well, there's many different things that we could do. We'd like City Hall to actually put forth some proposals of their own. But in place of that, we can tax the rich and corporations more in Portland. We could also use the internal service funds in the city. Those are available for use. In fact, Charlie Hales was considering giving $60 million of it. So there's money to be used that's not been used.
All right. And in terms of the rally, what kind of attendance have you gotten? How many people are out there today, and what's the scene like?
Well, we're just starting right now. People are just kind of coming in. We're expecting hundreds. At the last hearing, there was about 400 people or more. So we're thinking we're going to get similar numbers today.
And has there been any police response?
As of right now, there hasn't, and there shouldn't be, because, you know, this is a peaceful protest. We're having pies for everybody. It's a pie-themed, family-friendly protest, so we don't expect any problems.
All right. And what has been some of the past work of your group Solidarity Against Austerity to oppose this budget proposal and budget cuts?
Well, our campaign essentially started alongside the city budget process. Our goal has been to attend the community budget hearings and make a presence at these hearings and offer alternatives to the cuts at the hearings. We have testifiers that we line up. We have different outreach to community groups and labor groups who are being affected by the cuts. So we're having these people come to the budget forums and advocate for their programs and present a united message against the cuts.
Wonderful. And if any listeners are wondering, how long is the rally going to last?
Well, the actual hearing starts at 6:30, and those take a couple hours, so we'll be here until the hearing is over tonight.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with a member of Solidarity Against Austerity live from outside the Portland City Hall. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much.
Long-standing social justice advocate and labor leader Bill Fletcher Jr. plans to tour the region at three different events beginning 6 p.m. this Saturday in Portland at the Ainsworth United Church of Christ. He will also speak on Sunday at the Salem Red Lion Hotel in a forum organized by the socialist collective Willamette Reds and the Committee of Correspondence for Democracy, and again on Tuesday at the Vancouver Hilton. KBOO spoke with Bob Rossi of the Willamette Reds about the activist/author and what topics he hopes will be covered in the scheduled discussions.
The Bill Fletcher talk will be at the Red Lion Inn in Salem, and it'll be 1:30 to 3 o'clock and 3:30 to 5 o'clock. We'll have two sessions. He's in town for a union conference. He's an author and activist, and we're always pleased to host him and have him here to speak to us about his work for social justice. He's a leading labor, racial justice, and international solidarity. He's been active in the labor movement for years and years. He started out with the Shipbuilders Union. He was one of the major players in transforming the AFL-CIO, a well-known public speaker on domestic and international topics. And he's got a couple of books out. there are a lot of questions that arise about labor's role. We're only representing about 7% now of private sector workers, and this creates a crisis in labor. Bill has some suggestions on how we respond to this crisis in organized labor that I think we need to discuss and think about. An activist with his own union, AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, he believes in an activist labor movement, a democratic labor movement, but we have to flesh that out when we speak with him. The two groups are sponsoring the Salem talk on Sunday, May 19th. One is Willamette Reds, which is a socialist collective here in the Mid-Willamette Valley in Salem. The other one is the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, which is based in Albany and Corvallis, Oregon. We're cooperating on this because we both have an interest in labor, the left, and social transformation. Willamette Reds has a blog. It's at willamettereds.blogspot.com.
That was Bob Rossi of the socialist collective Willamette Reds.
This week in Washington, D.C., both the Senate and the House Agriculture Committees passed their respective versions of the 2013 Farm Bill. Both versions include serious cuts in SNAP benefits, better known as food stamps, over the next 10 years. KBOO's Sam Bowman, in collaboration with the Oregon News Service, has more on how the proposed changes will affect Oregonians.
Proposed cuts to the program most people know as food stamps are the hot topic in Congress this week. On Tuesday, the Senate Agriculture Committee passed its version of a new farm bill. On Wednesday, it was the House Ag Committee. The Senate proposal trims the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, by slightly more than $4 billion in the next 10 years. But the House would cut it by $21 billion. Jeff Kleen with the Oregon Food Bank says that they've been watching the only Oregonian on an ag committee, Representative Kurt Schrader.
His staff talked with us about proposing an amendment that would dramatically lower the SNAP cuts that are currently proposed. So we definitely appreciate those efforts to minimize the SNAP cuts.
The Oregon Department of Human Services estimates almost 91,000 Oregonians would no longer be eligible for SNAP benefits, about one-third of them children, if the House version of the Farm Bill passes. Kleen adds that SNAP already is being trimmed this fall, as stimulus funding that was allocated during the recession expires at the end of October. Some of the proposed savings would come from changing eligibility requirements to make food stamps only for the poorest families, restricting their use for people juggling low-wage jobs and high basic living expenses. Kleen says the food bank doesn't support that change. He says the current rules have worked well for people on the edge and still recovering from the recession.
We know a lot of people are without health insurance, facing a lot of out-of-pocket expenses. This allows us to serve those families earning income, but still not able to keep up with the high cost of living in Oregon.
For KBOO Evening News, this is Sam Bowman.
In Salem, charges of criminal trespassing against postal workers protesting the closure of a mail sorting plant have been dismissed. Five people were arrested on April 17th for refusing to leave the plant. Among them was retired postal worker Jamie Partridge, who spoke with KBOO's Robin Ryan about both the dismissal of charges and last month's arrest.
Well, the judge dismissed the charges. Apparently, the prosecutor decided that we were going to be more trouble than we were worth. We had been charged with criminal trespass, too, and they dropped the charges because, in our opinion, we suspect that they knew that we were planning to plead not guilty, that we had to occupy the mail processing plant to save it, that we were obeying a higher law, which was the constitutionally mandated postal service, that we had to trespass in order to save the People's Postal Service. And, in fact, the Postal Service management is engaged in criminal activity by closing mail processing plants and post offices and delaying mail and severely impacting communities' jobs and service.
Throughout the state of Oregon, they are closing four processing plants?
Four out of seven. The Salem plant is going down as we speak. They've already removed three machines out of 10 two are going to Portland, one to Medford, and the Bend plant is going down next month, then the Pendleton plant, and then the Springfield Eugene plant. That means that mail that you mail from one side of the of Salem to the other, which used to be delivered the next day, would will be delayed by a day. And mail sent from the coast, Mid-Willamette Valley, will be delayed a couple days.
How many jobs went along with all these changes?
With all these changes, we're talking several hundred jobs. The Salem plant alone has 100 jobs. There were about 28 of these mail handlers and clerks that were forced into retirement. There were about 20 what they call postal support employees that lost their jobs altogether, and then about 60 have been accessed into other positions. A number of these jobs that should be going to the folks from Salem are actually going to be subcontracted to a private, non-union, non-postal, low-wage mail processing outfit called Matheson Flight Extenders.
You and your fellow arrestees, how long were you in custody?
We were in custody for 9 hours, and I think they wanted to punish us. Maybe that was our punishment. There was five of us. We call ourselves the Forever Five because we're all about forever stamps and forever keeping the Postal Service alive and thriving.
And you had a reason for selecting your day of protest, did you not?
Yes. Memorial to the first Postmaster General, who was a revolutionary, who helped create the Postal Service as a vehicle to spread radical ideas throughout the colonies. We need a revolutionary Postmaster General. The current one is working for the 1%. Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006, they require that the Postal Service pre-fund retiree health benefits 75 years in advance within 10 years, so that 10% of the postal budget goes to pre-fund benefits for people who are not only not postal employees, they're not even born yet, and no other agency has to do that, no business would do that, but the Postal Service is being driven into debt and into insolvency with this congressional mandate.
Which member of the political realm do we have to thank?